This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Some of the more important questions of our time include compatibility between democracy and Islam, the stability of the Middle East, Muslim immigration in Europe, America's relations with Islamic countries, and the future of NATO. And on every one of those issues, Turkey is a critical component. It's a NATO ally, a European Union candidate, the bridge between the Middle East and Europe, and a secular democracy that many side for its neighbors like Iran, Iraq, and Syria. At the moment, Turkey is in the middle of a political crisis. We'll try to explain what's going on in parliament, in the streets, and at army headquarters a bit later in the program. But very broadly, the issues all revolve around the role of religion in public life and who will be the country's next president. Later in the hour, we'll talk with the BBC's foreign editor about kidnapped journalist Alan Johnston, and we'll talk money with the Motley Fool. If you have questions about the stock market and investments, you can email us now, talk@npr.org. But first, the political crisis in Turkey and why we should care. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. We begin with Hugh Pope, the author of several books about Turkey and Turkey Project Director for the International Crisis Group. He joins us from his home in Istanbul. Nice to have you on the program today.
Good afternoon.
So why is Turkey important and what is this crisis about?
As you said, Turkey is on the crossroads of so many things, and one of those is the edge of the Islamic world with the West and Christianity, but broadly. And yes, that's one of the crossroads. And I think that one of the things we forget about Turkey is that it's the biggest army, the biggest economy, and actually the deepest rooted democracy in among the 50 plus countries of the Islamic world. So what it does is increasingly watched by those further east.
And those further east include not just the Middle East, but of course the former Soviet republics as well.
It has links to the Turkic world, but I think that it is, in general, really the Turkey was the first country to Islamic country to be fully independent from the colonial period in the early 20th century, and it has been a leader in its own quiet, lonely way through the 20th century. But it's only now that its economy has really taken off, and that Turkey is on the edge of being accepted by the European Union, and that it is beginning to have cities that are really quite spectacularly successful, that the rest of the world is beginning to take notice of it.
Mm-hmm. To what extent does what's going on in Turkey now reflect developments elsewhere in the Islamic world?
It's very much the pioneer. Turkey's the first Islamic country to put in a firmly secular constitution, and it remains the most secular state in the Islamic world, and that's precisely what's at issue now. There's still a great number of people in Turkey that suspect that the current party in power has the intention of diluting that secularism and bringing Islamism in that was used to be in the Ottoman Empire in Turkey 100 years ago, trying to bring that Islamic law back in through the back door.
And explain to us in that context the very special role of the army in Turkey.
One has to remember that Turkey was founded by a group of army officers who led by Kemal Ataturk, and they created the state foundations of what is the Turkish Republic today. Alongside them was the Turkish, the Republican People's Party that became a one-party state for 20 years. And these two institutions are basically the founders of modern Turkey, and they are still very powerful in Turkey today. What has happened is that all the people, when they founded that country, it was about 80% rural. Now it's about 40% rural. Now all the people that came into the cities and have made the modern Turkish cities that we have now have come from a different background from those who founded the republic. And one of their main representatives now is the ruling party called the AK Party. And for instance, they have a slightly different culture, and they prefer to wear headscarves as a symbol of their Islamic observance. And that's now become the touchstone of whether someone is worthy of power or not in the eyes of the old establishment.
And there's also a lot of questions about, religion in public life in a lot of other arenas, local officials observing Muhammad's birthday, that sort of thing.
That is what the army listed in its very strangely timed statement at midnight last Friday. And I think that they're, in a way, they're right. There has been an increase in Islamic observance in schools, in public buildings, at grassroots level. I think that the ACT Party leadership, the prime minister, the foreign minister who was a candidate to become president and who still is a candidate but doesn't look as though he can be elected, these are people who've understood that there needs to be a pragmatic compromise with the powers that be, that is the army and the secular establishment, if they are going to go forward. However, there's another part of the ACT Party that is still much more closer to its Islamic roots and wants to see that Islamification take place. And I think that for the party to try and ignore the army is it's not going to work. And as we saw by these huge demonstrations that we had in the last month in Istanbul and Ankara, there's a very large urban middle class, above all young women, who do not want to have their way of life challenged.
And the army has in the past been ready to intervene to enforce that secular way of life. It staged several coups over the years.
Yes, not always purely in the name of secularism, but certainly there were three major coups in 60, 71, and 1980. And we also had in 1997 what was called a coup by memorandum. And this is really the lightest of all these interventions. It's a coup by web posting, if you like, but it's not really a coup, and no one is expecting an army intervention. I think that while we're having all this excitement about the demonstrations and president elections, we shouldn't forget that Turkey's a much broader-based country than it was even 10 years ago. It's much more successful, enormous amount of foreign investment. The economy is much more stable. There is a lot of political chatter and froth, but I think that in a few months' time, when it's settled down, we'll see that this was definitely not the worst crisis that Turkey has ever faced.
Mm-hmm. Let's get some listeners in on this conversation. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And let's see if we can reach Ezra. Ezra's with us from Ohio.
Hello. I want to first of all comment that in most of the news that we hear recently from Turkey, the current government is being referred to as moderate. I'm Turkish American. I lived in Turkey for 20 years, and Tayyip Erdogan was our mayor of Istanbul, and the kind of actions he took were definitely not moderate. Even though I live in the U.S. right now, I understand the democracy is very important, and one way or another, the majority should get their view out and so on, but I just don't agree that they are moderately Islamic. And, of course, we don't want the military to come in and take all the action that they're doing, but I just don't think that the current government should be referred to as moderate Islamic, and I find that wrong.
Well, one thing the government points out in its favor is that under this government, the economy in Turkey has really, as Hugh Pope just said a few moments ago, taken off.
Sure, sure, it did. But there are many, many other reasons for that, obviously. I mean, there are many more plants, and globalization is helping Turkey as well. There are other reasons for that, and economy should not be the only thing that a government is judged by. They are really trying to take actions. They have tried very hardly to replace the military with their Islamic people, let's say, or they've been trying to really reform education. Even though I'm very much for allow people to do, if they want to cover up their heads, you should allow that because it's democracy.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, 80 years of suppressing all these opinions is what got us here.
Mm-hmm. Hugh Pope, to what degree is it accurate to say this is a moderate Islamist government? I was trying to put that to Hugh Pope, our guest. Excuse me, if you would, Ezra.
I think that your guest is quite right, that there are elements in the ACT Party that are definitely not moderate. There are also some extreme nationalists, by the way, as well as some probably people who are much more Islamist than anyone in the army likes. But I think that it's also, one has to give the ACT Party the benefit of the doubt in terms of its main leadership, in that they have not done anything to try and put the country in a particularly and a solely Islamic orbit. As the Foreign Minister Abdullah Gül pointed out in his television interview the night before last, he said, you know, if we were so Islamic, why are we trying so hard to get Turkey into the European Union?
Hmm. Well, I truly believe that there's a face to this government, that they are playing their cards very, very right. They're very, very smart people. And when time comes, they would really like to get closer to the Eastern Arabic countries or more Islamic countries. But Turkey doesn't have oil. Turkey has to work for, you know, has to have an economy. So we can't really become a country, I think, such as some other countries that are in the same position with Islamic rules and so on. Right. And the thing is, if they had their way, they would go much farther than they can today. And a president has a lot to do what they can do and cannot do.
All right, Ezra, thanks very much for the call. We want to give some other people a chance. The presidency of Turkey is often described as largely symbolic. How important is it, Hugh Pope?
It's symbolically important, and it also has crucial powers because it was legislated in a constitution drawn up under military rule in 1982, and it forced, I think, the military generals who had it written believed that somehow the president would always be a general and therefore would always be standing there as a guard over the all the laws have to be go through his be signed into law by him, and he can veto them, and he is also in charge of vetting all the top appointments in the country. And that's actually where the current president, who's a staunch secularist, has been most active, is in blocking possible appointments by the AK Party to senior positions who he suspected even remotely of having Islamic sympathies.
Hugh Pope, stay with us, if you will. We're going to talk more about the crisis in Turkey and why it matters here at home. NPR's Ivan Watson will join us from Istanbul next. And we'll continue taking your calls, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. You still have time to email us investment questions for The Motley Fool. talk@npr.org is our address. David Gardner will join us later in the program. But right now we're talking about the standoff in Turkey between secularists and Islamists and why we should care about it. If you have questions about the current crisis or its significance here at home, 800-989-8255. Email again is talk@npr.org. You can also read what other listeners have to say at our blog, npr.org/blog of the nation. Still with us for a few more minutes is Hugh Pope, a Turkey project director for the International Crisis Group. And Hugh Pope, a couple of basic questions. What kind of Muslims are the majority of Turkey's people, and what percentage of Turkey's people are Muslims?
A very good question, because I think that's one of the main things people don't understand about the Islamic world, that there's not just one kind of Islam. There are several very different kinds of Islam, and indeed inside Turkey we have different kinds of Islam. Even superficially, there's about 80% are Sunni Muslims, as in the most of the Arab world, and there's also a 20% minority of what we call Alevis, which are a remnant of a Shia group. But even within those Sunni Muslims, you have different cultures of Islam. For instance, the Western urban culture of Islam in Turkey, for instance, sees absolutely nothing wrong with drinking alcohol and all elements of what one might think of as a European lifestyle. They're truly Euro-Muslims. However, in the east of the country, which is less developed, less rich, they are much more likely to be what we think of as fundamentalist Muslims. That's much more closely bound up to the narrow confines of what is set out in the Quran.
There is also a big ethnic and linguistic divide in the south and western part of the country. Many people are Kurds.
That is indeed true. We think there are probably about 15% of the country is Kurdish speaking, but there again, there are all kinds of there are perhaps a quarter of them are very nationalists, a quarter of them are almost invisibly Kurdish in the sense that they've almost completely assimilated. And there's no geographic coherence to it because half of them may live in the east of the country, but half are scattered in the west, which is a bit like Iraq in a way, that the Kurds there were once scattered more widely than they are now. But to change these kinds of things takes dreadful civil wars, and that's one reason that the United States is keenly involved in Turkey is that once upon a time, Turkey was one of the closest allies of the United States in the Middle East. But since the Iraq War, Turkey has come to believe, at least the ruling section and the military section of it, have come to believe that the United States has begun to attack, to act precisely against the national interest of Turkey, because it feels that the way that Iraq is breaking up is threatening a similar tensions in Turkey, and God forbid that there should ever be any kind of increase in civil conflict in Turkey, because it would make Iraq look tame.
Mm-hmm. One more question for you, Hugh Pope, from a caller. This from Hassan. Hassan with us from Lexington, Massachusetts.
Yes. I was just wondering, given that we have Christian democratic parties in all major European countries, most notably Italy, and then in the U.S., we have evangelical Christians really running a major part of the Republican Party, which is in power. If we do not allow Muslim democratic parties to play a role in the political process, are we not then sending a message that only extremist Muslims can play a role, because essentially we are locking out any of the moderate Muslim parties,
Yes, if you don't allow moderate Muslims to take part, won't you drive the Muslims to the extreme, Hugh Pope?
Yeah, only the extreme.
Go ahead, Hugh.
That's exactly right. What happened in Turkey was that the fundamentalist Muslims split off from the moderate Muslims due to the democratic process, and because the democratic process was working for them, they were able to eventually take power in the form of the AK Party, but in a democratic way and in a way that was accepted by the majority of the people of Turkey as legitimate. However, they do remain confined by the opinion of the whole of Turkey, which is why I think that the AK Party is more or less unable to become a kind of Jekyll and Hyde situation where one day it looks moderate and the next day it looks fundamentalist, because the Turkish people won't accept it. But I absolutely agree. The way that the AK Party has used democracy to come to power, and the way democracy is making sure that AK Party stays democratic, is proving very interesting to other countries in the Middle East, which are, of course, in much less comfortable circumstances than Turkey. But we can see often in editorials in Arab newspapers that they're very, very interested in how the AK Party has done it and what this means for a possible moderate, liberal Islamic solution to their problems.
Hugh Pope, thanks very much for your time today. We kept you longer than we promised. I thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hugh Pope, Turkey Project Director for the International Crisis Group, with us on the line from his home in Istanbul. Joining us now is NPR's Ivan Watson at our Istanbul Bureau. Nice to have you on the program, as always, Ivan.
Thank you, Neil. Happy to be here.
And we've been talking a lot about the background of this crisis. Explain to us where we are, the presidential election, which happens in parliament in Turkey. As far as I understand it, that's on hold, and there's now a scheduled general election for what, a couple of months from now?
Yeah, they pushed forward the date for the general election 4 months to July 22nd, and there was unanimous agreement in parliament after all the bickering and fighting in this crisis of the last week to hold those general elections on July 22nd. It's also worth noting that they're going to make another stab at the first round of presidential elections, the one that failed last Friday and that kicked off this whole crisis. They're going to try it again on Sunday in the parliament, but already the opposition secularist leaders are saying that they will once again boycott that vote. So it's kind of an exercise in futility. It's perhaps a way of saving face.
So we're expecting to see a general election in a couple of months' time, where very broadly the issue will be, do you want Turkey to be secular, or do you want it to be more Islamist?
I guess you could put it that way, and I think that's the way a lot of Turks look at it, a lot of particularly those who have been demonstrating in the past and who are very suspicious about the AK Party and really accuse it of playing a double game. But I've met a number of AK Party supporters who are not remotely religious. They tend to come from the working class, and they don't say that they vote for the AK Party or for Recep Tayyip Erdogan because he's a spiritual man or because he wants to create an Islamic state or anything like that. They say they vote for him because he gets things done, because the economy's done well, and because he and his followers are pretty honest compared to the secularist politicians who have ruled this country for the past 80 years.
Let's see if we can get a caller on with you, Ivan. This is Mohammed. Mohammed with us from Minneapolis.
Yes, my question is, first of all, to what extent is it very likely here if the Islamic movement in Turkey succeeds in a democratic election where a pro-Islamic government is elected, that the military will intervene? And then my second part of the question is, in the Islamic world in general, there is this trend that more pro-Islamic governments are coming to power. How much of that is the impact of secular governments being seen as corrupt despite their promotion of Western democracies?
Mm-hmm.
A good example would be the Palestinian election a couple of
years ago. Why don't we just stick to Turkey? Mohammed, why don't we just stick to Turkey for now? And the question is, what's the likelihood, Ivan Watson, at this point, do people see of military intervention in the event that the AK party succeeds in this election? What has the army said about that? And briefly, how do you think the United States and Europe would respond to that?
Well, we've already seen a military intervention of sorts into this political process, perhaps the first military intervention in the world ever by internet, with this web posting on the Chief of Staff's website at midnight on Friday night with a very blunt warning about the threat of Islamic fundamentalism in this country, and the military saying that it reserves the right to defend secularism in this country and that it will act to defend it. So we've already seen that, and you already have suspicion coming from the AK party deputies in Parliament, from observers saying that this was bad for democracy, that they may have influenced the Constitutional Court, which had to rule on whether or not the first round of elections was valid or not, that they already made an impact on this process. And that move was criticized by the European Union. There was also some mild criticism coming from the U.S. as well. And I think people are watching, and some are worried that the military may step in again if they feel that Erdogan and the AK party push too far in the coming months.
And finally, Ivan Watson, Turkey, of course, is a NATO member, a longtime U.S. ally. This Islamic government has allowed the United States to maintain its bases in Turkey?
It has, and the Incirlik Air Base is a major transit route for supplies and goods coming to American troops in Iraq, as well as the border crossing, the Habur border crossing that leads to northern Iraq. If you talk to American diplomats, they say this is essential for the U.S. war effort in Iraq.
Ivan Watson, thanks very much. We appreciate your time.
You're welcome, Neil.
NPR's Ivan Watson with us on the phone from his bureau in Istanbul. And we'll be back with a conversation with John Williams, the world news editor for BBC News, in just a moment.